Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capehorn. All the booze news and views, from Absinthe to Zinfandel. Drinkage à toi.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to our podcast. It's the Drink Talking. Half an hour of drinks information, a can of liquid being shaken up and sprayed into your ears, interesting information, a spume of it coming to you over the next half an hour. Hopefully you like drinks, you've tuned in. I am Tom Sandham, I'm one of the Thinking Drinkers, and I am joined here today by, to my left, I'm going to start with Sam Capehorn, the mistress of wine. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Tom.
I like you.
Oh, I like you too.
And what have you been up to? Anything interesting?
I've been on the box.
Yeah.
One of the wine experts on Saturday Kitchen.
Ooh,
yeah, and they've moved the format live into the studio.
What? That's pressure.
That was a butt-clenching experience, but it was really good. Our guest was Jerry Horner. Hallowell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was a lot of fun, very lively. So that was good, and that's actually taken up a bit of time. It's quite a bit of prep to get that done. So that's probably been largely
doing. Jerry?
She didn't try to drop.
Is that because she's teetotal?
Not sure. Possibly.
Her husband's a Formula One man.
That's right.
Red Bull.
Yep.
So he probably
Christian Horner.
Don't drink and drive, Ben.
Don't even putt.
There we go.
Oh, yes.
Boom. Let's start with a joke. And Ben, what have you been doing apart from sitting around in your pants drinking beer?
Well, not much apart from that. That, again, takes a lot of prep. what have I been doing? No, I've been...
not been prepping for your show?
Well done, Sam.
Sounds harder than it is. My wife says... how was prancing around in your tights today? And I was like, well, she's doing nothing. She's looking after kids. So stuff her.
Yeah. Your wife, she's always saying, sounds harder than it is.
Yeah.
I didn't introduce you properly. Sorry, Ben. Ben McFarland, beer writer of the year, formerly. He will be here
three
to talk
times.
About beer.
I won it three times.
Yep, you're going to be doing a...
Today is my Legend of Liquor. Who is a lady.
Yeah, we love ladies.
Oh, another
lady. The feminist thing is getting out of hand.
Yeah.
I'd say.
We're convinced. And Sam, you're going to be tasting some wine.
Red wine. First time we've done red, I think.
Red wine.
One of the two main colours of wine, I do believe.
It is.
I don't know.
I've done my
research. I'm a big fan of pink.
Well, yeah. I know you are.
Anyway, they're coming up later, those features. And before they are, we have our first section of the show, which is Spit or Swallow, our cleverly named feature which deals with something we like or dislike in the industry or in drink. And today I am spitting or swallowing. I'm doing a bit of both. And first of all, I'm going to start with a spit. And I was reading regional newspapers, big fan, local papers.
Keep them alive.
God damn.
They are the lifeblood.
Communities.
Communities.
With pubs, along with pubs. They are both dying out.
Newspapers,
as well.
Bakers. And
florists.
Candlestick makers.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. So in the Birmingham Mail, there was a story about hairdressers getting fined for giving a drink out. You know, if you go into a hairdresser and
you get a free glass of bubbly.
Well, apparently the coppers are having a go at them.
Because they didn't have a licence.
Apparently, £20,000 ban, a possible 6-month sentence for the complimentary drink. If you don't have a licence for booze, which frankly is a hairy situation all round, snippy coppers combing the area. clipping people around the ear. A few people have got away with it, but it was a bit of a close shave. Those who got fined wanted to curl up and dye. Brush it all under the carpet, I imagine. Hair. But I'm not going to do that one, because in another, more interesting local newspaper feature...
Can I just say that I have often offered a drink at a barber's, which gives you an inclination of the kind of class I go to, as you can see from my hair.
Curly locks.
But it's a bit of a dilemma because they bring it to you and then you're having your hair cut and you have to sort of say to the barber, stop, I need to reach forward and then drink it.
Mm.
And it seems a bit indulgent.
I'm a firm believer in the idea that you shouldn't move your head,
which
is something you're told about when you're three, which is something I had told my own 3-year-old Joseph, do not move your head.
But also
I turn down all drink at the hairdresser, never have a hot drink. I might accept water if I'm hungover and I just want it there because I'm twitchy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, hair gets
hit. No, this isn't my spit or swallow. Ben keeps knocking the table. And it's not my spit or swallow, so I don't want to get...
But very quickly, one more.
I
think it's because if you have a drink, then aesthetically your hair is going to look a bit better.
Well,
it's a psychological trick. Let's get them mellow.
Get them drunk and everything's going to look more symmetrical.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then you sober up on the tube home, whatever.
And they gave you a fringe.
Oh, my God.
But interesting that you think you need that, because what I do anyway is say, when they put that mirror around the back, does that look all right? Yeah, yeah, that looks fine. Yeah. And then I go home. Look what you've done. Anyway, that's not my spit or swallow. My spit is coming from the Bristol Post. And the headline will do most of the work for me. This is an original newspaper, and we are in festival season, listeners, so if you're listening to this after festival season, bear that in mind. And it said this, the best supermarket alcohol deals you need to know about. And here's the opening lines. Although the weather may be unpredictable and unreliable, great opener, guys, Jesus. There's almost always one thing that's given every year. People will be drinking a lot of alcohol. Why we don't condone binge drinking? We know there are thousands of people, us included, frantically researching where to get the best deals on booze and take them to festivals. So we've decided to remove the hard work for you and take a look at the best deals of alcohol at the country's four big supermarkets. Effectively, this is all about buying cheap booze.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell are they on? It really is a spit. Beer, Ben, you'll like this. All four supermarkets are offering reasonably good deals on beer, so it really depends what you're after. At Asda, you can buy 20 Carling cans for £14 or 18 Bud Lights for £12. Really? Well, is that what you have
to
do?
But also, if you're drinking Carling at a festival...
Are we going to the toilet all the time?
You can be to the toilet and it's not going to do it.
But it's not doing much anyway.
Unless you're doing acid, don't do acid.
Well, don't do drugs. Don't do drugs. But, I mean, they go through all these supermarkets. 3 cases for 21, 10 cans of Bud, Kronenbourg, Budweiser, Coors Light, Amstel, 12 cans of Strongbow.
Given
Foster's
the lavatorial situation at festivals, aren't people actually best off just drinking vodka?
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
But let's, Sam's gone. Yeah. That's terrible, terrible. Yeah. You should drink vodka.
Yeah, you should drink vodka. Well, let's hear what they've got to say
and
about
water.
Wine. It's definitely not everyone's favourite festival drink.
I think you'll find if you go to Glyndebourne.
The festival season is much wider than just Glastow. But Asda is offering a decent deal on boxed wine if you fancy it. You can get 2 2.5cl boxes of red wine or white wine for £23.
Just generic. Wine.
I mean,
red and white.
No wonder local newspapers are in so much trouble.
And no wonder one in five 18 to 25-year-olds aren't drinking, if this is the advice they're giving young people today. But the best they saved for spirits. You can always stock up on even cheaper booze from the likes of Aldi and Lidl, which we would say are very good supermarkets and have interesting booze selection, where a 70cl bottle of spirit will most likely set you back about £10. They are asking young people to go into Aldi and buy a £10 bottle of vodka and take it to a festival.
What's
is that really responsible?
What's hypocritical about this is that on a Saturday night, if there was a big incident in Bristol where everyone was drunk and behaving like complete douchebags,
yes,
they would be the first. It'd be all over like a flannel.
It would be their splash and 2 and 3, wouldn't it?
Yes.
It'd be a photo story.
Yeah. Well, they might even have a vox pop of some old Grimmies.
Definitely have a vox pop.
Terrible.
They would have vox pops. And if, like our newspaper, the work I used to work on, the Hartford Herald, if they insisted on taking photos of the people you vox pop, then you would indeed have to go and take photos of your family and vox pop them, which is something that I'm ashamed to say.
I was really irritated not that long ago, and I was in the back of a cab and was reading someone's leftover, I don't know, mirror, sun, tabloid. It was really sexist. Loads of pictures taken of women who'd been to a... Oh, I think it must have been the one in Liverpool, Aintree,
yeah.
Yeah, and it was lots of eyelashes, lots of boobs falling out of dresses, and a couple of people, you know, passed out on the grass. And yeah. I thought, where are the pictures of the drunk men?
Well, yeah, and that's the story, isn't it? Because I genuinely am spitting angry about this, because it's just a case of, well, the media loves to say we have a drinking problem. Like you say, Ben, it's a massive contradiction to the stories that they love to run. If we do have a drinking problem, it's this. It's that we're drinking a lot of cheap alcohol and not...
But also...
And very hypocritical of the paper to then recommend basically really cheap booze.
For cheap booze.
But also it's bad advice.
It's really bad advice.
Because if you are going to a festival, you're going there to escape from the everyday drudgery of life.
And hear some music.
And I've been to festivals, and that bit where you have to get from the car park to your tent or whatever, if you're carrying four crates of cheap Carling... It's stupid. You might as well carry one case of slightly stronger, better beer, which will cost the same amount, and if you're so inclined, it will give you the same effect. And also, all the chicks will be like, oh, look at that guy, he's drinking Carling.
Isn't he interesting?
This guy is drinking imperial stout brewed with coconuts.
Don't drink.
My God, can you imagine what he's like in the sack?
Listeners, do not drink imperial stout at festivals.
No, it's really,
it's certainly not,
it's
a
really
sunshine
shirt. But you get my point.
I get the point, and that's the point I'm making, and that's why it makes me very, very angry. Also, Aldi and Lidl, to single them out, we've talked about them in the past, the fact they have quite interesting selections. I mean, we tasted El Dorado rum, and that rum has been on sale, the 15-year-old at Aldi, for a very good price. Maybe retail about 60 quid, and you can pick it up for 40 quid at Aldi. They do some great, great stuff.
See, a better article would have been how to make a cool cocktail at a festival using the stuff that's around you.
Ben, it's a feature I've written. Yes. And I agree with you.
Well, you should. Well,
not least because I could cut and paste it and get 50 quid from
Bristol Post. 50 quid.
You wish.
Yes, angry. So I think that's my spit. And I'm conscious that we could get bogged down in this. And we could go back to the hairdressers, which was also interesting. But we'll move on. And we'll move on to my swallow. Now, my swallow this week, I'm afraid, is a shameless brand plug. It's for Talisker.
Oh,
and the only reason is they sent us some shoes this week.
They sent us some shoes.
They are,
and
but
these
they're not
are,
any normal
these
shoes.
These are the best shoes I've ever had, and they're certainly the best brand thing I've ever had. They are a collaboration with Oliver Sweeney, the cobbler.
So they're quite posh shoes.
Yeah, they're
not
posh
shoes.
Oh, my God.
But they're bespoke with Talisker branding on, and our initials. Ben's got a pair of these as well.
Yeah.
I want a picture.
And that, well, I've got a picture here because I wasn't prepared to bring it in.
Can I just say that's a visual thing? It's not going to be great.
It is.
We'll
put
it on Twitter.
I'll show you the picture. I mean, I would have worn them, but I'm never going to wear them because they look so nice in their big wooden box. I'll never wear them. But they've also got a hip flask in the ankle compartment, as well as a compass. They are just extraordinary, extraordinary things.
Explain the compass?
Well, because Talisker's about roaming and going out.
Well, why would you need posh shoes for roaming?
They're walking shoes.
They're posh, really cool
shoes.
I thought they're like...
And so you've got your
loafers.
Hip flask.
They're not loafers.
No. They're practical shoes.
Oh, with the hip flask and a compass.
Yeah, and I think we are actually trying to get them into our show because we will be tasting some Talisker whiskey in our show. I should say that as well. But we're trying to get them in as our time travel shoes for our history.
It's a Talisker 10-year-old, which is lovely stuff as well.
It came with a bottle of whiskey as well. Yeah. I mean, a beautiful presentation. So really, that was my swallow.
The highlight of the week, I expect.
I really was. I was genuinely shocked. They must
cost get sent a lot,
of
stuff, and I appreciate it all. My God, we get some shit as well.
Yeah.
But when these shoes arrived, I was very excited.
And they knew your shoe size and everything.
Yeah, they did all the research.
But they put our initials on. I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Did you include your middle name in the
initials? I did all my initials, T-E-H, Sam, because I've got four names.
Oh, that's posh. What are your middle names?
Edward and Horan, which is my mother's maiden name. So,
sweet.
Yeah.
Mine was BAM. It doesn't sound that good. I wish I'd done BM.
I thought BAM was actually your middle name.
No, my middle name was... my middle
Ben's
name,
middle
A,
name.
Is Aneurin.
Where's that from?
Aneurin Bevan. He was the Welsh politician who created the National Health Service. I love to drink, more importantly.
My son's initials are WC. I don't know how that got...
You idiot.
I'm not sure how I didn't notice that near
the
time.
Well, mine are Samuel Sandham
SS.
So that's not going on his pyjamas. No. That's for sure. Middle name, Sam?
Oh, Jane.
Jane. Nice. That's nice.
Solid English name.
Yeah, I like
it. But what was your maiden name?
Jones.
SJJ?
Yeah. No, it's SJC.
I just not
okay. Cut that bit, Ian. That wasn't that good.
Anyway, I can't just say I love Talisker because they gave me a pair of shoes. I love their whiskey. We will be tasting it in the show, so if you want to try it, it's a great whiskey from the Isle of Skye. It's got a little bit of smoke to it. It's an Ireland whiskey. Fantastic single malt, and the 10-year-old is a great example of that. But also, Talisker have done a lot of work with matching whiskey with food. Mm. And this is something we're really trying to promote because it's trying to present whiskey in a more versatile way. And we've been to some tastings recently with Talisker where they've tried it with salmon, with vegetarian haggis balls. It's
good.
Really good with smoked
basically
salmon.
Anything Scottish fare, are we thinking?
But good Scottish fare, not like quality shortbread.
I mean, one of the best food.
What's wrong with that?
Well, that's good. All right.
It goes with shortbread, but it goes with chocolate. They paired it with a Madagascan chocolate, cocoa nibs, sea salt and cocoa runners.
What nibs?
I have no idea. They're using briefs.
They're little points of the vanilla.
Okay. Yeah. Soda bread with peanut butter, fresh oysters. Shuck it and see, Ben.
Shuck it and see.
Really,
you don't like oysters?
My body doesn't like oysters.
But, okay.
Not anymore. And it seems to be like a growing thing. Like, once you've got nausea, it just slowly goes to spew.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I had three occasions where it got me.
Yeah.
I went off them for ages, and then I was reintroduced. I just thought, I'll give another go, and I was fine. But this is relevant. Someone said to me, you shouldn't drink oysters with spirits.
Well, I don't know about that. One of our best food and drink experiences, Ben, you were there holding my hand, I believe, was on Isla when we had Lagavulin with oysters and other seafood that had been taken directly from the sea, fresh that day. Drinking it with Lagavulin whiskey is still
and
just
that
one
was,
of the most
that was my reintroduction to it.
Oh,
okay, so it there you work. Go. It did work. Yeah, maybe that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of medicinal whiskey.
Maybe
to go
I need
with
to be
it.
Flown up to Scotland and taken to taste some.
Yeah. Well, maybe once this podcast.
Maybe you just need to put yourself
man
together.
Up. Yeah.
Well, not man up, that's sexist.
Okay, well.
Come on.
Or is it sexist to say she can't man up? Well, I think you can man up. Just because you're a woman, you can man up. You go for it.
Good. Are you done?
I am done. Do it, though, listeners. Do it. Drink whiskey, eat food with it. It's a good thing to do. So now, having done that, coming up after this short break, we are going to be enjoying some wine with Sam.
Do we want to say, and if people do want to send us free stuff, this is the kind of exposure you can get.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Ben McFarland from The Thinking Drinkers, and you're listening to It's The Drink Talking.
Hello, listeners. I hope you're still with us. It's been interesting stuff so far, hasn't it? Hasn't it, though? Hairdressers, whiskey and supermarkets. But now we're going to do the best bit of the show, which is we're going to enjoy tasting. And that is with Sam, who's our wine expert. And what are we tasting today, Sam?
Today we are tasting Syrah/Shiraz.
Phew. I thought
not
you meant a slash.
Three.
That would be bad.
So basically, take one, pass it on. That lovely gluggy sound. So basically, Syrah and Shiraz is the same grape variety. It's a red grape variety. It's basically called Shiraz in the New World, mainly Australia and South Africa. Elsewhere, it's named Syrah. And basically, it kind of denotes two slightly different styles. Like, Syrah tends to be slightly lighter, more peppery, and Shiraz tends to come from warmer climates and be more kind of rich and chocolatey. Thing about Syrah, Shiraz, lovely colours, as you can see.
Beautiful.
It's quite a chunky grape variety. I mean, the parentage is meant to be a grape I've never heard of before, Jerez and Mondouce Blanche.
You've never, as a master of wine, you still think that's interesting.
Yeah, so
there's still things you're learning.
No, you learn these things all the time.
Oh, really? And is that because they're sort of crossbreeding grape varieties?
No, because this is historical. There are thousands of different grape varieties. Mm. And also they have different synonyms. So Syrah and Shiraz isn't just called that. It's got lots of historical other names. And in fact, Shiraz, they're not really sure where the origin of that comes from, because Shiraz is the capital of the Persian Empire, the modern-day Iran, which used to produce a wine called Shirazi. So it used to be thought that maybe the origins of Syrah, Shiraz, were from the Middle East, but actually the two grape varieties are actually from France and around the Rhone.
Ah, yeah. Like all the good wine.
The wine is really, really complicated, isn't it?
Too complicated, you might say.
I mean, shouldn't there be someone who just goes, right, let's start again?
Yeah.
Because there's so much that's sort of similar.
Basically, let's not make wine get too complicated.
Mm.
But I think that's part of their plan.
Whose plan?
Just the wine people plan. To make it so difficult to understand and get your head around. There's so many caveats that it creates a sort of
barrier.
Mystique.
Yeah. Okay, so I think you're right. I think that they don't help themselves. Almost every week in the wine trade press, you read that some region has just allowed to call wine single vineyard wines, or that, you know, the Germans have redefined their quality ladder again or whatever. And you think, really? I don't think consumers really understand that. And it's quite complicated, and actually it's quite boring. But if you drill down to the absolute basics, it's actually
quite easy.
Yeah, it's quite straightforward. When the basics being, what is a grape variety and where is it grown? Whose phone's that?
Actually, not mine this time.
I hope it's not mine. So basically, for this one, what you need to know is, this is Syrah. And it tells you something immediately. So you think, okay, what are the key characteristics of Syrah? What I would say is a masculine grape. It's quite rich and brooding and chunky. And if you smell it, I mean, this is the one.
Oh,
this
my
is.
God. I've just got like blackcurrant.
Okay, so this is £15.50 at the Wine Society, and it's a Croats Hermitage. So thinking that Syrah comes from the Northern Rhone, two places it really has snazzy wines is Hermitage and Côte Rôti. They're the absolute pinnacle of Syrah production. And then the kind of slightly more affordable layer down, if you like, is this Croats Hermitage. Okay. So it's 100% Syrah. It's Paul Jabelet Année Le Jalet, 2015. As I said, it's £15.50.
Now, if we talk about our areas of expertise, spirits or beer, the style of beers can vary dramatically. The style of rum, say, can vary dramatically depending on where it's made, the ingredients that are used. So this is Syrah, this is one style of, but do they use different yeasts or different production methods that change that? Or is it all about the quality of those grapes?
So it's lots of things. So fundamentally, you get the grape and then it's where's it grown. So we'll see in a minute. So this is Syrah. And even though it's quite a deep colour, it's kind of quite juicy and it's quite fresh. Often in Northern Rhone, you get amazing bacon frazzle, crisp notes. So it's amazing bacon notes and violets, licorice, like really deep, dense, amazing kind of fragrant characters. So the big thing really is the grape variety and then climate.
Okay.
So we'll go on to the Shiraz from the McLaren Vale, which is really hot and it's just inky and rich and deep. Then things like yield, which is essentially how many bunches have they grown on the vine. Mm. And if you have a smaller yield, the wines are more concentrated. And if you have a bigger yield, they're doing that. And then, yeah, and then you can use different oak and you can use different yeast.
Yeah,
you can use different clones, different rootstocks. I mean, there's all these little variables and different decisions you can make. But the fundamental one really is, if you're new to wine and you don't know what you like, the first thing you need to check is, what is the grape variety? Because that will give you a massive flavour clue. As I've discussed in another podcast, the problem with old world wines is it doesn't tell you what the grape variety is. You have to learn. Right. So you have to learn that legally in the Northern Rhone, you have to learn that Croats Hermitage is Syrah.
Right.
Whereas you go to the New World, the wine we're going to taste next, and it's got written on it, it's Shiraz.
Hence why it's more accessible. Now, the Hermitage.
Yeah.
Has that got anything to do with people who don't go out very much?
The Hermitage is a place, and there is a place on it that was the Hermitage, and I think a hermit did used to live in it, which is why it was called that. You know, if you want the kind of most pure expression of Syrah, then Northern Rhone is where it's at. But it's grown all around the world. You can get Syrah in Chile, in the sort of the Languedoc, all around the sort of southern France. Okay. There's a lot of Syrah as well.
I like big chunky reds.
I cannot lie.
And I like Rioja as well.
Mm-hmm. Love Rioja.
That's quite a big red as well.
Yes, yeah, so Rioja is made from Tempranillo, and that's, I'd say it's not quite as chunky
so
generally.
So between 1 and 10, then if Rioja would be a...
on 7.
And this would be a 6?
Well, this would be probably like a 6, but a Shiraz would be more like maybe an 8 or a 9.
Okay.
Because Rioja's from Spain, gets pretty hot. But the big thing about Rioja is they use quite a lot of oak in it.
Right.
So it might also be the oak that you like rather than actually Tempranillo.
They use vanilla, a lot of vanilla.
They use a lot of American oak, which actually the second wine does as well. This one we're going to move on to, the Shiraz, uses a lot of American oak, so I think you'll really like that.
You with a seamless link.
But was that enough information?
We talk about it a great deal in the terms of how it tasted, but I don't really care. I mean, from a price point, from a price point, it's about £14.99 out of my price range. no, but I think, especially if I'm just drinking wine alone, I like to know that there's something in that, and that's really big and hearty.
And a beautiful
proper
young colour.
It looks fantastic. It looks like red wine.
It really is. Does it not coat your mouth? I mean, I like it.
So basically it's a chunky wine. It's a deep skin variety. It creates a lot of colour and this tannin, which I think you're all talking about. So tannin is the stuff that dries your mouth, like the tea. So this is quite chunky. But equally, there's quite a lot of fruit there, which I think the silkiness and the tannin are kind of separate.
It is balanced. It does seem to go through all the things you've said.
There's a lot of fruit there. I think 2015 was a good vintage in the Rhone. So I think this is
worth picking out.
So this is a good wine. And then just compare it.
Yeah, let's finish
it. Get rid of that one. We've now got a wine from Australia, from the McLaren Vale, which is in South Australia, and it's called the Hedonist Shiraz. And it's
they make a beer as well. Did you know that?
Did they? McLaren,
yeah, they've got a brewery there.
You see, I like the old classic, sort of Frenchy sounding versus hedonist.
I really like
the label on that. I think the label, the simplicity and its lovely fonts and the Shiraz over the sort of classic and quite busy French. We're getting into design here. But then to put hedonist on it, I'm not so sure. It's like,
also, it's a hedonist with a picture of a pig on it.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
I'll be the judge of whether he's a hedonist.
But also,
interestingly, stop taking over my bit. So two things I want to say about this as well is, A, not sure what the random pig's all about on the label, but this wine is also biodynamic. Does that mean
Does that mean anything?
Yes, it does. Did they bury some cow skulls in
exactly,
the
ground? Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's all about the lunar cycles.
It's kind of organic on steroids. The lunar cycle is consulted, and you kind of fill cow horns with silica, and you do a number of different preparations, and you stir things, and it's quite funky. There's definitely something to it. I generally carry a calendar around with me that says when wines drink best. So if you've got a really special bottle of wine, it's called like Maria Tun, T-H-U-N. You can get it on Amazon or anywhere. So I have a physical hard copy, which I just realised I gave away to someone recently, so I don't have one in my bag. So imagine if you've got a really snazzy bottle of wine, then you'd look up on the diary and you'd look for a fruit day, ideally, and it basically says this is when your wine will taste best. These days are when your wine will taste most delicious. And then a flower day, then a leaf day, then a root day. And it is true, Christmas Day, just gone, was a root day, and my wines were disappointing, all of them.
Really?
Seriously, and a lot of the supermarkets will hold their press tastings on fruit day on the biodynamic calendar.
Really?
Yeah, no word of a lie. And so it's a bit bonkers. The whole thing is slightly, you've got to be kidding me. But actually, for me, I would definitely say if you had a tasty bottle of wine, look up that it's a fruit day and drink it then.
Full moon. go for it.
Yeah, because don't forget, wine is mainly made of water. And if we think about how the moon influences the tides, and the fact we're mainly water, which is the whole, where the whole lunatic comes from, and I don't think it's unfair to think that this is a living thing, wine. Yep. It changes in bottle and it, you know, it breathes and it just...
I wonder if we are on a good one today. These are tasting... nice.
They are tasting really nice. I think we might be. Anyway, so this is quite different. This is a Shiraz. So this is a more, you know, it's just a kind of richer, riper example. And you can taste, Ben, you will like this because A, if you like big wines anyway, and if you like Rioja, this has got American oak in. So American oak, listeners, a lot of wines are put into barrel, and French oak has small little kind of grains and pores in, which releases notes of sort of cinnamon and spice. And American have bigger pores basically, and they're more coconut, like with Tom's Diplomatico rum. You know, you get these really lovely vanilla popcorn notes, and it just actually, it doesn't make the wine sweet, but it just gives a very supple, smooth texture, and it just makes it really yummy.
Yeah,
and
just
quite velvety.
Very, very nice. And just to ask about the relationship with the wood, with the oak, we just tried a French Syrah from the Rhone, which I imagine gets quite hot, but I imagine McLaren Vale gets at times
hotter.
The temperate climate in Australia mean that you're getting a lot more bang for your buck out of the, out of the barrel?
Yeah, you'll have high alcohol. Let's have a quick look. So, yeah, it's 14% for the Hedness, which actually is not that bad. Mm. And then the Croats is 13%. But also because you've got such massive fruit and weight and structure, I mean, this is a full-bodied wine by anyone's reckoning.
Yeah.
It can hold up to the American oak. Because if you chucked quite a delicate wine in American oak, it's not going to really work. Again, like everything, balance.
So I'd serve that with a sort of chocolate dessert at the end of the meal. That would be the sort
lovely,
of...
Lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really. But I really think this is a wonderful example of New World versus Old World.
Same grape.
It really captures
grown in two different...
see.
So you've got the kind of... This is just... The French is more elegant, a bit more refined, very pure fruit, but still quite accessible. I mean, I think Syrah and Shiraz is a really accessible grape, but then the Shiraz is just like a big cuddle.
It's a real crowd pleaser, isn't it?
But it's a bit cheaper. I mean, at the moment, it does go on offer.
I've got a favourite.
It does go on to offer, like, to $10.99. It's normally $13.99 at Waitrose.
What would you pay for it? $10.99, would you think that's a fair price?
You know what, I think $13.99 is an okay price. I mean, at $10.99, I said this is a bargain.
Okay.
I mean, it's a smart wine, biodynamically made, American oak barrel aging. This is a premium wine, you can tell it is. So I'd say $13.99 is a fine price. $10.99 is picks them up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also 2015.
Yeah, both the same vintage. But yeah, really interesting to see that it's basically the same grape, and they are quite different.
They are very
different. But with
things
in common, the deep colours, the spiciness,
flavour profiles aren't completely
dissimilar.
Yeah. I really enjoyed those. They are fantastic. It helps that we like red wine. And now we've had a bit of a drink, it's probably time to have a bit of light relief, Ben, in the form of a legend of liquor.
This is a good one. This is again...
You always preempt your sections with, this is good or great.
Well, in fact, it's great. It's Catherine the Great.
Catherine the Good.
Catherine the Great, the Russian Empress. Before we get into why we're talking about her in a drinks podcast, let's get one thing straight. She did not die having sex with a horse.
What? I thought she died on the toilet.
She did not die on the toilet either.
For those of us who don't actually know who she is, can we just backtrack?
Yeah.
Catherine the Great was an 18th century empress of Russia.
Right.
She ruled Russia. And
with an iron fist?
Yes, yeah, she was pretty hardcore.
Was she?
But there have been some rather scurrilous rumours about how she met her maker. First, she had sex with a horse. She didn't do that, I don't think. I can't say for sure.
You weren't there.
I wasn't there, man.
There was another one where she sat on the toilet, which can't be true because ladies don't go to the toilet, do they?
No, they don't.
And another thing about Catherine the Great, she wasn't called Catherine the Great. Her real name was Sophie Friedrich August von Anhalt-Zerbst, which is...
Why was she called Catherine the Great?
Because she became great.
Oh, like Peter the Great.
Exactly. Just... 16, she married Grand Duke Peter, who was heir to the Russian throne.
How old was he?
Well, it was a ridiculous marriage. It wasn't very good. It was miserable. Peter could barely raise a smile, apparently,
in a bedroom. Let alone,
He often turned her down for Nookie in preference for playing with his toy soldiers.
I feel his pain. Yes.
I know, sometimes. But she didn't go without because she had a string of lovers.
None of them were horses.
None of them were equine. Right. No. And the marriage really hit the rocks in 1762 when Catherine fronted a bloodless coup. And replaced Peter on the Russian throne.
Bloodless, though.
She, a coup against her own husband?
But one died?
No, but so she led 12,000 troops, and she was right at the front of it.
And do you know how she convinced them to do it, Ben? She gave them vodka.
That's a little fact
I can add to this story. Yep. She tanked them all up on vodka, and that's why they joined her.
And then when she became ruler, she was bloody good at it. 35-year reign.
So how old was she when she took the throne?
I know. Unbelievable. She's like Karen Brady from the 19th century. No.
Bit like a Thatcher. What's the German one called?
Angela Merkel.
Yeah, Angela Merkel. Anyway, she doesn't need a comparison. She was Catherine the Great. Anyway, during her 35-year reign, she ruthlessly crushed internal uprising and extended Russia's imperial reach into Poland, Black Sea and Crimea. And she was also close friends with the French philosopher Voltaire.
Diderot.
She wrote operas, she wrote books, she was a passionate champion of the arts. She amassed an amazing art.
Sounds like quite a complex person who basically is a little bit bloodthirsty, possibly. Well, booting her husband out.
Basically, her husband was a bit of a wimp, a bit of a wet. Couldn't get it up. Mm. Wasn't a good marriage. And instead of just going, right,
Let's split up.
This is what's happening. You're going to stop being king. I want to take over.
Did he survive that? Did she kill him?
No, he died later. He was murdered. And there was rumours that she was involved.
Yeah.
But never, they were never confirmed. Much like there's rumours about having sex with a horse and dying on a limb. Yeah.
Why is she a legend of liquor, Ben?
Thanks, Tom.
I don't want to move you on here. But
the reason she was called Catherine the Great, really, was she loved stout.
Stout?
She was an amazing stout drinker. Imperial stout. Now, there was a point where Russia opened up the market to the world and Britain started exporting beer to Russia. And they sent it originally to her husband, and it spoiled on the way. It was pretty embarrassing. It was a bit of a diplomatic faux pas. Mm. So they thought, right, well, we're going to have to brew the stout stronger and with more hops, more alcohol to withstand the sea journey to Russia. It got there. She absolutely loved it, and she really championed it. Especially liked a stout called Thrales, which is from London. But then they started making these Baltic Imperial Porters in Russia. And she was a real fan of this. Think Guinness with steroids. And she was a massive, massive drinker of Imperial Stout. And now Imperial Stouts are sort of, all the beer gigs, people love it.
I'm not sure I've ever had one.
I mean, I don't want to pigeonhole any style of drink at all, but it's something I would go for in the winter,
rather than at a festival.
Rather than at a festival, when I'd go for carling.
Yeah. It's not something you drink when you're particularly thirsty.
No, it's an experience.
It doesn't have a high refreshment ratio.
It's the poor to the beer world.
It's like eating chocolate.
And Harvey's down in Sussex, they do an amazing Imperial Russian stout, which is sort of based on the kind of stouts that would have been going up to Russia. But they would have had gone through French blockades. I don't want to get into the politics of the time, mainly because I'm not
au fait with them in any way.
Of course, I did a degree in history and
intellectual history. Yeah, it's not quite as I know.
But in an exam, if it's just real history, you could always say Russia was in a state of flux, and more often than not, you'll be right. And it was.
When was this? Sorry, I missed her dates. When does she?
When was it, Tom? It was the 18th century.
What was it later? 1700s, 1800s?
It was the 1700s, which...
So it's after Peter the Great.
Oh, yeah.
During which time Russia was actually a bit more stable, to be fair, in a state of flux. Peter, in the 1600s, brought it all together.
Yeah.
So they were all right.
Quick question. Why is Imperial Stout called Imperial Stout?
Because it was the Russian Empire.
So they took the stout over and they liked it so much that they then...
They started brewing
they kind of
it,
stole it,
and it sort of it was brewed.
But it's not a Russian beer, is it?
No.
Imperial Stout's an English beer.
It was a British beer
being
exported to Russia, and they loved it. And she came to London quite a lot and loved it, and it became something.
Well, London Fashion Week, things like that.
London Fashion Week. Great British Beer Festival.
Taste of London.
Yeah, Taste of London.
Tacos.
Yeah, and
I'm glad you didn't continue with things like the National Sewing Bee and other
female.
When we went to Fashion Week, I thought, come on.
No, she was a great girl.
Yeah.
But the fact she just loved this stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's
she
interesting,
did some great,
isn't it?
Great things.
It's proof, Ben, proof, I think, that for a lot of people who say they don't like beer or a certain beer style, you don't know until you tried. She could have had anything. She could have had champagne. By that point, there would have been champagne, would
yeah,
there?
Yeah, too right.
Because Madame Veuve Le Coquot, as heard in a previous podcast.
Yeah, she was more 19th century.
Okay,
but, I mean, Dom Perignon, I think, was not far off that.
And if she was travelling to Europe, she could have had her pick.
Proof.
But she went for stout.
Proof good. Between it that ladies can drink complicated things.
Wow.
And they don't need to worry their pretty little heads.
And they've got their own minds.
No.
It's remarkable.
But she was amazing. She was quite a character.
Yeah. Good
and,
choice.
Catherine the Great
was great.
And she didn't have sex with a whore.
That
we know of.
That
we know of. We don't know one way or the other for sure. But anyway, thank you for that. A great legend of liquor. Thank you, Sam, for your wines. Thank you, me, for my Spittle Swallow. It's been a great podcast again. You've learned a lot about drink. You've probably laughed yourself into a position of wetting yourself. And we are brilliant. So why don't you tune in again next week when we'll be doing more drink shenanigans.
And if you want any more wine information, then go to my site, www.themistressofwine.com. Thanks.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and like to learn more about drink, then you can see Ben and Tom, the Thinking Drinkers, in our live show where we'll be tasting alcohol, making you laugh. We're on tour. All dates and ticket prices can be found on our website, www.thinkingdrinkers.com. Please buy a ticket. Thank you for listening.
Ta-ta.
Cheers.
Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.